And welcome. Today is the 2nd of April, 2013. We just chanted several Sanskrit mantras. Sanskrit is a ancient language, arguably the most ancient. If you study Sanskrit, which I have, Antoinette has, you will find many, many words that have Sanskrit roots in the English language. You'll find many words in the Irish language. Irish is very close to Sanskrit. And you'll find many of the common names of places throughout the world that have Sanskrit origins. The Sanskrit language is called the... What is the name for the Sanskrit language? It's not Sanskrit.
Devanagari.
Devanagari. What does it mean? Deva means gods, and Nagari means... city. Language that is spoken in the cities of the gods. Earth is considered to be a middle, part of a middle planetary system. Higher planets, middle planets, lower planets. A little bit different from the Middle Earth concept. And the middle planetary systems, among which is Earth, are where humans are. In higher planetary systems, you won't find humans. They do not have the stamp you need to get in the door. Can I see your stamp, please? Oh, you don't have a stamp. You can't come in. And the higher planetary systems is where the gods live. The godlike beings, the devas. So deva means god. What is the root? What is the Sanskrit root of deva? Do you know?
Div.
D-I-V. And from div through vridhi, D-I-V becomes... D-A-V, pardon me, D-E-V, E is pronounced like A, Dev. So div means what? It is the verb to shine.
That's where you get the word divine.
Correct. Divine, divination. Divining rods. That's it.
Yeah, subtle, nice energy.
Div means to shine. It's beings who shine. When you see pictures of the saints or Jesus, Mary, and the holy carpenter, Joseph, how do they paint them? How are they depicted? With halos. Because they shine. Because they're saintly. You can shine because you're saintly. You're developing your what body? Physical body? Light body. Or you can shine because you're a god. A god means a higher being, like an angel, archangel, in the universal hierarchy management system. Everything is being managed, orchestrated, tended to by certain beings. Oh, no, there's no beings. No. It just all happens. Happenstance. There's nobody behind it. If you go to a beautiful park like, I don't know, Phoenix Park, place like that, you might go there someday and there's not a soul there. And you could say, oh, well, it just happens. This park is made beautiful like this. Just cause. It's an accident. No, it's not. There are many people looking after it. It takes time and energy to make a park beautiful. It takes time and energy to manage anything. Any concern requires management, time, and energy. That means there are personalities connected to it. Just because you can't see them doesn't mean they don't exist. You can't see radio waves either. Doesn't mean they don't exist. Even now, as we sit here, this room is flooded with Wi-Fi. On the Lakshmi network, as a matter of fact. You can't see her. You can't see the network. But it's here. So, the devas are in the higher planetary systems. Sanskrit is the language. Sanskrit is an ancient language. And Sanskrit is not just a language. It is a divine language. Because it comes from beyond the higher planetary systems. It comes from the spiritual realm. Mantras are written in Sanskrit. You can say a prayer to God and express your heartfelt love, offer your service, ask for various blessings and favors in your own tongue, in your own language. Will God pay attention to that? Of course. Of course. The main thing is the intent. Where is your heart? But we cannot compare English language or Irish language or Spanish language or French language to Sanskrit. There are no mantras written in French or English. The mantras are in Sanskrit. So if you chant a mantra, then it is always recommended that you chant it in the original Sanskrit. Because it is a spiritual sound vibration. Sound is the most important of all of the sensory elements. So mantra consists of two words in Sanskrit, man and tra. Man is a noun and tra is a verb. What do they mean? Deliver the mind. Man is mind. Man and the usual word for mind is manas or mana.
Is another word for tra ocean? Just curious. Is it called beach in Irish? Trawl.
Yeah. Trawl.
T-R-A with a accent on it. I'm just wondering, would ocean mean...
Well...
That's what I'm thinking.
From an astrological perspective, the moon is the mind. And one of these symbols, but the moon is specifically the subconscious mind, as the planet Mercury is the conscious mind. But the subconscious is 9/10 of the brain. And the symbol for the moon and for the subconscious mind is?
Water.
Ocean. Mm-hmm. Water, yes, but ocean specifically. Why? Because the ocean appears, as you look at the ocean, it just seems flat. Of course, it's vast, but ain't nothing going on. Right? Until you dive in. And then there is a vast world going on underneath. And that is like the subconscious mind. Not perceptible until you dive in.
That's interesting, actually, even ratio of earth to water on the planet, as opposed to the ability of one's mind, the subconscious mind, as opposed to conscious.
What is the ratio of earth to water?
It's 2/3 water, it's 1/3 land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is around that.
Mm-hmm.
Which would make more sense, because when you're comparing the mind to the conscious to the unconscious.
Yeah.
We say that we don't use enough of our unconscious.
Well, unconscious is where everything exists, in the unconscious. What does the storehouse of the unconscious hold in it? All memory. All memory. Of everything you ever did in this lifetime since you were born is in there. You can say, well, wait a second. I don't remember what I did when I was 2.5 on April 2nd. Yeah, you do. You do not consciously remember it, but it's in there. You can access it. Well, let's put it this way. It can be accessed. All beliefs, fears, hopes, conditioning, behavior patterns, negative, positive behavior patterns, addictions, everything that's been learned, it's all in there. That's the hard drive. It's all in there.
Mine got wiped.
This got wiped. And all past lives from all the lifetimes is there. Can be accessed. I've done guided healing meditation work with people now for, 24 years. Taking people into past lives. Not just as a curiosity, but with an intent to resolve some conflict. Not hard to go there when you know how. So mantra means to deliver the mind. Tra means to cross over. To cross over the what? The mind. To transcend the mind. Because the mind dominates everything. Everything.
So do you mean, like, instead of like clearing out the closet, actually just bypassing the closet?
Yeah. Well, your point though is well taken. Because in order to do that most effectively and lastingly, you have to clear out the closet. So what the subconscious also contains are samskaras. And from the word Sanskrita, we get that's language, Sanskrita. We say Sanskrit, but it's actually Sanskrita. from Sanskrita with vriddhi. In Sanskrit we get sanskara. Sanskrita means to make perfect. Sanskara means the same thing. So what are sanskaras? Impressions. Imprints of everything that happened in every single lifetime. They are impressed on the mind. Just like when you click save on the computer. You know when you click save? That's not a problem. It's when you forgot to click save that you usually get an anxiety. When you click save, that goes into the hard drive and can be accessed unless you forget that it's in there. It's in there. These are the imprints, impressions, and conditioning from everything that's happened. Okay? So, we become conditioned by all of this. And that determines how we behave. Two people walk out in the middle of a bridge across a huge, wide, wide river like the Ganga or the Mississippi. One person goes, wow, isn't this wonderful? The other one goes, oh my God, oh my God. One thinks it's great and the other one is beside herself with fear. Why? Because of sanskaras. Imprints. What happened in the previous lifetime that created that fear? Or earlier in the same life, something happened. Whether you can remember it or not, it's in there. So your impressions dictate your behaviors. When you use mantra, you cleanse the mirror of the mind. The mind is a mirror. The ocean is a mirror. So you are cleansing all the material impressions connected to what? If the mind is a mirror like the moon is reflective. It's a reflective surface. The moon reflects the sun's light. The mind, because the moon planet and the mind are reflective of whatever you focus on. So, what are the choices? For the mind, simply two. You focus on matter. In other words, if you think of the moon being up there, the mind focusing down here.
Also the word, you know, to reflect on something, is to think about something.
To reflect on something, correct. If you focus there, now you're focused on spirit. But this material existence that we are in with these bodies is pretty much a 3D experience. It's the total experience. It's not like there's a screen and you can look away and look for your popcorn. No. Wherever you look, it's 3D. Pretty clever. You can eat, you don't even know you're in the movie. Because you're in the movie so deeply. It's hard to look at the movie when you're absolutely immersed in it. So, when you focus on the material, the mind becomes imprinted with all these material impressions. When you focus on spirit, that cleanses the mind, and raises the mind up beyond the mundane. Beyond these material impressions. Correct? So by chanting mantra, it cleanses the mind from all these impressions. If a mirror is covered thick with dust, can it reflect anything? No. Can it reflect light? No. Light is spirit. So if you want to reflect spirit and spiritualize yourself, you first got to dust the mirror, don't you? So spiritual practice, really, whatever kind of spiritual practice, is dusting the mirror. And then you go, oh, Jesus, it's not coming off very easily. You got to scrub. Where's the sif? Where's the... Where's the Windex? Yeah. Seems like you've been scrubbing that thing for days. No. Lifetimes. You're cleansing one day and then the next day you're watching horror movies. And you're covering it with more crap. Why don't we watch things like horror movies? Well, you might. Well, why shouldn't you? Because you're taking these powerful impressions, negative impressions, and you're imprinting them on the mind. Horror movies, when well made, scare the crap out of you. When poorly made, they don't. But when they're well made, they do. And that, when it has an effect on you emotionally, not just mentally, it has that much more of an impact or impression when it hits the mind. Right? I remember when I was a kid, you go see a horror movie and then, oh no, you don't want to walk around the house, or you don't want to turn the lights off, or you know, silly things, but it has that effect on people. So mantra cleanses the mind. So what do you figure? We chant for a couple of hours and that should do it? No. It takes quite some time. Well, how many lifetimes have you been here? Probably a few thousand in various species. You've worked your way up, and congratulations to the human life, human birth. That is way, way up the totem pole. Can you go back down? Oh, yeah. Absolutely. You can. But the human birth gives you a chance of freeing yourself from samsara, repeated birth and death. That's why this is such a valuable, valuable opportunity. So there are five elements which are called the pancha mahabhuta. Pancha means five. Maha means
great.
And bhuta means, actually, bhuta has many meanings, but in this case it means elements. And what are they? The material creation consists of five elements. What are they? Bhumarapannalo vayu kammano buddharevacha. Air, correct?
Earth, water, fire, air, ether.
Space. Did they come in that order? Actually, they come in reverse order. First, in the ethers, before, just when creation is barely beginning, there's no earth, there's no water, there's no fire, there's no air yet. Can't breathe. No, nirvana is beyond that. And you have the mahatattva, which means the material ingredients. It's like having a lump of clay. Okay, I got my lump of clay. I'm going to make something. That's the mahatattva. That's the material substance. I don't know how to explain it to you because it's hard to wrap your mind around that one. You know, this is the your gear if you're God. And the first thing that is created is ether. And ether is what?
Sound.
Space. Ether is simply space. Can you work without a workspace? The first thing you need is, well, where's my workspace? Well, you need a workspace? Yeah. Where's my office? What's an office? Workspace. If you're on the job, maybe you got a trailer to work. So you need space. And the sensory what's the word now? There's a particular word, I can't think of it, but function. The sensory function connected to ether is sound. Can you hear it? Sound. Sound is the most potent of the five sensory experiences because it travels beyond, through and beyond them all. So first you have space, and with that you have sound. In the Bible it says in Genesis, in the beginning was the
word.
Sound. And when sound vibration is lowered, then what is created from that? From ether, we then get air. Ether is invisible. Can you go like this and feel ether? No. Now comes air. Right? And what is the sensory function that appears with air? Go, like this. What do you feel? Hers is short-circuiting. You feel, when you wave your hand back and forth, you feel air. And stupa. Alright? So? I'm testing for sound. Is there sound when I do this? Can you hear it? This, no, sound has to be present in it. The sound already pre-exists. When I hear air moving quickly, can I hear it? Yes. I can hear it now when I do it next to my ear. You see? It's how it works. So, ether, sound, air, touch. You feel the air? Blow on your hand. It's ingenious. This is the mind of God. You know? Appreciate who this guy is. And do you think he sat around for eons thinking up this stuff? I don't think so. He came to him pretty quick. All right, so we got air. Now let's slow down some more. Let's make it more dense. We're going to get denser and denser because we're going to get down to this physical level. How dense? How much more dense can you be? Okay, from air, what is next? Can you see ether? No. Can you see air? No. Now, what is the next most subtle element?
Fire.
Fire. Why? Because fire, now you see it, now you don't. Fire dances, correct? Mm-hmm. You can see it, mm-hmm. but a second later, it's not there, it's there. And then it's there, and it's... Can you grab fire? Of course, we don't want to try to do that. You can't grab fire and carry it anywhere, can you? Unless you catch on fire, in which case it's grabbed you, not the other way around. So once fire appears, what is the sensory function? Sight. You can see it. Now we are at the third element. This one has appeared. Now we can see it. Correct? We couldn't see the other two. This one we can see. Well, we can see it. Now you see it, now you don't. But there it is. We can see it. It has form. In Ayurveda, the eyes, eyesight is ruled by what element?
Pitta.
Pitta. Fire. Fire. Eyes have light. Right? Why are we attracted to people's eyes? Because their life force is in their eyes, isn't it? You can look at any part of their body, no matter how attractive the body is, there's nothing more compelling than the eyes. Correct? Mm-hmm. And that's how you can know somebody, by looking at their eyes. The rest is details, frankly. Right? So you look at the eyes. What was I just going to say? Forget. Okay.
Smell fire, or is that...
No. You're too far ahead yet. So, can you touch fire? Can you feel fire? Yes. Yeah. If you put your finger through a candle, can you feel it? The candle flame? Yes, you can. Right? So it has touch, like air. Does it have sound? Does fire make sound? Yeah.
Can you hear it burn? Yeah.
Yes, it does. So sound must be present in all of the elements as we go down. It must be present in ether, it must be present in air, it must be present in fire. Right? Okay. Then, after fire,
water.
Fire generates water. Now, isn't that a conundrum? How the heck does fire generate water? In fire is present. No, it's not like that. In fire is present air and ether. But those three now together will produce water. Okay, so water's sensory function is
taste.
Rasohammapsakanteya. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I am the taste in water. You will know God by tasting water. God is present in taste. In other words, rasa means juice. When you eat food, what do you relish in the food? The taste, the flavor. But what is the taste? It's juice. And the juice provides the flavor. You know, whatever it might be. Can you think of a food that's absolutely dry without any juice? Okay, so water has taste. Now, that means water has to have within it sound, does it?
Mm-hmm.
It has to have touch. You have to be able to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
It has to have form. You have to be able to see it. And it has to have taste. And now it has all four. This is your fourth one of the Pancha Maha Bhuta. Five great elements. We're at the penultimate. So now we go right down to the densest level. Earth. So, from water is produced earth. And what sensory function does earth provide that we do not have yet?
I smell.
Smell. Fragrance. Scent. Aroma. Does fire have smell? No. Does air have smell? Only if it's carrying a smell, not its own. Ether does not have smell. Next time you go up in outer space, jump outside the capsule and have a whiff. It has no smell. So now we are down to Earth. Does Earth have sound?
Yeah.
Yes. Does it have touch? Can you feel it?
Mm-hmm.
Does it have form? Can you see it?
Yes.
Does it have taste? Can you taste it? Dirt? You taste dirt. We've all tasted dirt. It has a particular flavor. Well, actually, when they select land for Vastu, they do soil tests to determine, not just for farmland, land on which to build a house for sacred architecture. And the soil, they taste. That's one of the tests for the soil. They taste it. And they can help determine, you know, whether it's good soil or not. You're not to build your house on bad soil. Just like if you built your house on sandy soil, I mean, that's never a good idea, now, is it? You might be off with the first big rain that comes along. Down the road. So, Earth. Now we have all five. It's explained that there are millions and millions of universes. This is one. And Bhumarapan Lalobayu Kam Mano Buddhir Evacha Ahankariti Yangme Bina Prakritir Ashtada. There are five gross elements. We've discussed them. Plus three subtle elements. What are the three subtle or astral elements that are not part of creation that we've described but are part of life? And we can say it is the astral body. This we've described what would be the physical body. The physical body is made up of these five elements. And the astral body, or subtle body,
it's hard.
think of the Sanskrit word right now. Sukshma sharira, subtle body. It consists of three. We've been talking about it since the beginning. Manas,
mind.
Bhumir, earth. Apa, water. Analo, fire. Vayu, air. Kam, ether. Mano, budhir, evacha. Ahankar, iti yangme. So, mind, manas, buddhi.
Intellect.
Buddhi. Kang mano buddhir eva cha. Ahankar. What's ahankar?
Ego.
Ego. Ego.
What else is ahankar?
Ahamkara. Ahamkar is ego. Made up of two words. Aham, I, kara. Antoinette, what does kara mean? Kre, kara. Do you remember?
No. Isn't that a king or something?
Do. Oh. I am the doer. I'm the guy. Hey? Mm-hmm. I'm the go-to guy. I do everything. Who's that sound like? The ego. That's the ego. It's all about me. Have you heard about me? Let me tell you about me. Enough about you. Let's talk about me. That's the ego. Ahankar. So these three, mind, intelligence, ego, that's the subtle body. And within this conglomeration of elements is the 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. What is that?
Nano.
A nano. What is it?
The soul.
The soul. They describe it as being the size of 1/10,000th the tip of a hair. Sounds kind of big to me. Surely it must be smaller. The soul. So the soul is riding the chariot of the body. There's a great word in Sanskrit, manoratena. Manorata. What's
mind's chariot? Mind.
The chariot of the mind. Oh, she's riding the chariot of the mind. What does that mean? She's off. She's speculating. She's caught. She's caught up in some. The mind is going on all this and this and that. It's the chariot of the mind. Don't listen to it. You know, people go, oh, what did this happen? And that happened. And this and that. Chariot of the mind. Mano Rata. Okay, so when you die and you leave your body, who leaves? Of all these elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego, and the soul, ladies and gentlemen, who exits the building with Elvis?
the mundane elements would stay behind, huh?
The mundane, well, there's the body. You see the body, it has, if you do an autopsy, are all the organs there?
Yeah.
It's all there. Heart's there. Everything's there. Right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have somebody who dies who is perfectly healthy, correct? Mm-hmm. Young person, healthy, vital person, but somehow they've died.
So mind, intelligence, ego move on.
So the subtle body moves on. In which case, yes, sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. How do we know?
Ghosts.
Yeah, but how we know is at the time of death. It's explained. Yam yam vapi smaram bhavam tyajat yante kalevaram. Whatever you remember at the time of death, that state of being you will attain without fail. That's why the time of death is so important. What is the second most important moment next to the time of death? That is the most important one. Time of death. Moment of death.
The time of birth.
Time of birth. And everything in between? Practice. It's all practice. It's the time of death. What are you doing? Getting in shape. Working out.
So the time of death are be like your new birth chart.
Not exactly. Because your new birth chart is your new birth chart.
But you can't tell where people are going depending on when they die.
You can tell that in your existing chart. Mm-hmm.
They say that where
fifth house.
Northern course or southern course. How does it work? Mm-hmm.
It says in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that those who leave their body during the three times in the three periods of the light, yogis, spiritual practitioners who leave their body in the three periods of the light, never take birth again in the material world. What are the three periods of the light?
Daytime.
Daytime, as opposed to night. Then what? And the next one, the other two are the sun and the moon. What are they? Waxing moon, the bright fortnight, where the moon is getting larger. That's a time of light. Moon is waxing. And the sun? The sun has a northern course and a southern course. Uttarayana and Dakshinayana. Uttara means north, Dakshina means south. When the sun travels the 6 months in its northern course, so when it's at its furthest southern perigee, and then it begins to travel north. So for us in the northern hemisphere, that will be the depth of winter. Right? What happens on or about December 22nd? Shortest day of the year. Longest night. Correct? And from that point forward, what happens? The days get longer, no? By what? If you calculate it astronomically, by 1 degree each day, the sun will come up 1 degree each day. So it's minuscule, but we notice it over time. Now we see, or we're starting to get a lot of daylight. Never mind daylight savings time, but so right now the sun is in its northern course. So that's the winter solstice. Summer solstice is when?
June 1st.
And what happens from that day? Longest day of the year. No? Then it begins to goes into its southern course. So if you die when?
Not dying. After the 21st of June. Or at night time. Or during a black
or during the 2 weeks.
Or during the waning moon. Waning fortnight. That's what it says. Okay, so what we were talking about before we were so pleasantly interrupted by yet some more interesting information. If you are focused on, if you have one material desire at the time of birth, what will happen?
The time of death?
Death, sorry.
You'll come back to fulfill it.
You will come back to fulfill it. You cannot do that without a vehicle, my friends. You cannot drive the M50 without a vehicle. And that vehicle will be a body. So you will get another body to fulfill your desires. If you are riddled with desire, then knock yourself out. It might take you a while to fulfill them all, but you'll need a body. If you have one desire, you still need a body. Why? Because you're getting an opportunity. So that means that the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and ego will leave the physical body. You can read all about these near-death experiences where people float out of the body and they are looking down at themselves on the operating table or on a gurney stuck in the hallway. The case may be, right? What is that up there? That's the mind, intelligence, and ego. Subtle body. Looking down. Oh, they're really working on this guy. Oh, wait a second, that's me. Boy, they're working, they're really trying to save this guy. Yeah, don't save me, I just saw the light. I'm going into the light. They get real angry when they have to go back. Especially when they just smash their body in a car accident. So, if you have no material desires, then what? You let go of your mind, intelligence, and ego. Why? How could you let go of that? Because this is the, like we said from the beginning, this is the sanskaras, the impressions that you have gleaned from so many lifetimes of material identification. Thinking simply, I am this body. Next life, I am that body. Next life, I am a human being. Next life, I am a woman. Next life, I am a hog. Next life, I am a horse. Next life, I am a butterfly. I'm a cockroach, cucaracha, whatever it might be. Okay. We're looking at the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Here Krishna says, Antakale Chamam Eva Smaran Muktva Kalevaram. Whoever at the time of death quits his body, remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. If you think of God, you will go to God. Krishna Shanmasa Dakshinayanam Tatra Chandra Masam Jyotir Yogi Prapya Nivartate. The mystic who passes away from this world during the smoke, the night, the moonless fortnight, or the 6 months when the sun passes to the south, or who reaches the moon planet again comes back. They threw in the moon planet as well. The moon planet is actually, according to the Vedic system, a heavenly planet. My spiritual master used to say, Prabhupada used to say that. They say that they went to the moon and they brought back some rocks. He says they didn't go to the moon. And of course, I too believe that. They didn't go to the moon. That never happened. They produced that on a Hollywood soundstage to make the Russians think they went to the moon. Why? Well, if you look, the moon, they say the moon's appearance is like a desert on the Earth. Similar. The rocks were of the same variety. They weren't like some kind of elements they never discovered. Well, if you're up in space, looking down on Earth, do you see the desert light itself up at night? Does it shine? Does the Sahara shine? Does the Gobi shine? No. So, they weren't at the moon. The moon shines. The moon actually has... It reflects the sun, but there's also a self-illumination. Okay, so... by chanting mantra, one frees oneself from identification with the physical body. That's the value of chanting mantra. And there are all kinds of mantras. Depends what you're trying to achieve. Questions, comments, observations. Anybody got any transcendental stories they want to share?
I have an interesting story.
Okay.
And, I went to visit the Jimmy Johnson. It's actually moored at the Custom House Quay. It's supposed to be a replica of an immigration ship. So I did that at the weekend. It was really interesting. But when we went below board...
Immigration ship, you mean they, when people would come in, they put them on a ship?
During the famine.
During the famine years, the 1850s.
To take them to the States.
That's right. Yeah.
A lot of people died on the way.
That's right. Mm. Well, this is one particular ship. I'm not sure how much I should tell you in case I spoil it for you, so I won't tell you everything.
Just why will you spoil it?
You won't find anyone.
Okay. Well, on this particular ship, no one died.
Uh-huh.
On many others, they did. But anyway, when we went into the bowels of this replica,
and no one died for one voyage or many voyages?
All of the voyages.
So it's several voyages.
Yes, yeah. And all of the other ships, many people died.
So that's very unusual.
Yes, yeah. Including the crew in the end, when the ship came to its life, at the end of its life, even the crew survived. It must have been blessed. But anyway, it was quite extraordinary. When I went into the bowels of the ship and they have these wax figures, I could feel myself filling with emotion, and I couldn't figure out what was happening. I couldn't really, I thought I was going to cry, and I was getting a bit embarrassed. That happened a few times. And I was just wondering what I had tapped into, and I suspect it might have been ancestral memory. I don't know.
Well, I mean, what's it called? When objects hold on to the imprints. When you can read that, what's that called?
So it's not the ancestry.
Non-locality or something?
No, it's... the ability to do that, to take a rock and say where it's been and who had it and who held it and...
Yeah.
It's a name for that.
Yeah.
In other words, you're just tuning into the vibration that's in there. When there are powerful vibrations, especially emotional vibrations, when people go through real strong emotional experiences, that discharge of emotion goes into the atmosphere of that place, right?
If you can feel that in meditation, if you're working with your higher self, you could tap into that feeling regardless of whether you're in that ship or not.
Yes.
But you had a trigger object that helped you to go into and experience that state. That's what happened.
Correct. So that emotion was deposited there by somebody who was probably being forced to emigrate, and you picked up on it because of the sensitive soul you are, my dear. So you would have picked up on it.
It's like when I was,
it is for, go ahead.
I was driving into town a couple of years ago, and I'd driving into work in the morning, and every time I'd get to the main light outside what used to be Blake's restaurant in Jordan, I'd get this feeling in my stomach like someone just punched me, like, and winded me. And so that happened for 2 days, two going in and then at the same time two coming back home, the same junction. And I figured out afterwards that weekend a boy had been, a young fella had been run down on the Saturday or Sunday night.
Mm-hmm.
And exactly when I was going through the junction, I was getting the feeling of being hit by the car.
Wow.
So it's the same sort of circumstance. We're going through.
Yeah, it's sympathetic resonance of some kind. So extrapolate that. How? Somebody gets their home repossessed or their car, for example, right? And of course, if you're looking for property to buy, there's great deals to be had on repossessions, or there's, you know, good auction prices, you know, bargain basement prices. Gee, I got it for a steal. That's the last thing you want to buy, is a house or a car or some other objects that have been taken away from people who were attached to those things, living with those things. This is my home, and I was forced out of it. So all of that emotion is in that house. That's what you're buying.
You can always come stay, even if you like, kind of tear, but still kind of sitting.
Well, your thriving on the back of somebody else's misfortune. Your fortune is due to another's misfortune. Kalindi was meditating one day on Jagannath. That's Jagannath on the altar there. He's a manifestation of Krishna or God. And Kalindi likes to, on occasion, buy a lottery ticket because she somehow thinks she's going to win the lottery. So once in a while, she'll buy a lottery ticket. So in the meditation, it came to her. Says, I'm just trying to set it up in a certain way. Okay. I know you weren't.
I wasn't focusing on that question.
She wasn't focusing on, I didn't say you were, but it came to you that you don't want to win the lottery. And of course she would say, well, yeah, you do. No, no, you don't. And the answer was, what?
There's so many people out there that are yearning to win it, the stuff that you win. That all that negative energy,
all that energy invested,
are attached to the money that you win.
And then, there's the drawing, right? They wait for the drawing. 8 o'clock on Saturday, or for, I don't know what it is, right? Let's go see if we win. Did we?
One number.
And the statistic of people who win after 5 years, I think the statistic maybe like 100% is gone or something.
You have a better chance getting hit hitting by lightning than you do winning the lottery. That's a fact.
Yeah,
so all of the disappointment and that energy invested in the lottery, and now you won it, all that goes with it.
You hear so many disasters about people whose lives just fall apart and they're not happy.
They did a lot of research on the English pools.
It's contaminated.
It's contaminated. And it's interesting too, because people who never had money, meaning they don't know about money, they don't know how to manage money, they don't know how to deal with money, it actually becomes more of a curse than a blessing. Because money, a lot of money, because it's crazy money sometimes.
$117 million.
I mean, come on. What are you going to do with that? Well, you might be able to.
Sure, you could give it extra.
You have energy like that has to be. It has to be managed. You know, what if we had 100 cows or 100 sheep out here right now? You'd have to manage it. It's a heavy responsibility.
Even in the syndicates of 7 people here, where the rest would be here.
Is it the same then with kind of fame and stuff like that? If the whole world is...
No, that's different. You know, and when you have your own, that's your own fame. It's not everybody's trying for the same fame, like everybody's trying for the same lottery win. That's different.
Yeah, gotcha.
But what goes with fame is a lot of people are resentful.
Of you. Yeah. It's not even they're resentful of you for winning. It's the fact that they have emotionally so attached to winning themselves, as opposed to being jealous of you winning it. I think it's just...
No, I'm talking about the fame part.
Oh, fame. Okay. It's a whole combination of emotions that go with the winning. That's what I'm getting at.
And, you know, Ireland is kind of famous, even according to the Irish, for being a nation of begrudgers.
They have loads of money anyway.
Yeah. You know, rather than, you know, we're in America, you know, we're kind of happy when somebody wins something. We go like, good for him. Good on him. You know, generally speaking, you know. Because, you know, America is just a melting pot of all these different people that came. But here, they think you're too uppity. If somebody gets a break, they think, oh, who's he think he is? He doesn't think he's anything. He just got a break, that's all. It's kind of an interesting mindset.
I have a question, Jim. I find myself really struggling with life, just the people doing bad things, the litter on my doorstep, people not taking care of horses, their animals, all of this really upsets me. What is the answer? Is the answer just to pay attention to your practice and try to transcend it all?
Correct. In this world, I mean, the first thing you got to understand about this world, you are in prison. This is the prison system. You're in it. And the punishment is birth, old age, disease, suffering, and death. And again, and again, and again. That's the punishment. You can say, oh, no, this is a wonderful world, and this and this and that. Yeah, well, there's a few nice moments in the prison house, too. You know, when somebody throws the drugs over the fence, and we're all getting high for a couple of hours. Yeah. We're actually enjoying ourselves, or we're watching a movie on the telly. We got the Wii going in our cell, and somebody brought a piece of cake that the wife had made. Yeah, no, it's great moments in the prison. You're in prison. Mm-hmm. It's punishment. It's for you to be reformed. They want to reform you. They want to rehab you. So you remember who you are. You're a soul. You don't belong in Mount Joy prison.
But you're not affected by heat or cold or...
Just try to tolerate without being disturbed. The appearance and disappearance of the winter and summer seasons. That one?
Mm-hmm. That's really what.
No. The appearance and disappearance of happiness and distress are like the appearance and disappearance of the seasons, winter and summer seasons. Mm-hmm. Cold, hot. They arise from sense perception alone. Just trying to tolerate them without being disturbed.
That's the difficulty I have, my tolerance. Some days it's just zero. Mm-hmm. Why does that happen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to try not to be affected.
And when you mentioned there about reforming, rehab, what exactly do you mean? I didn't quite understand that.
We are spirit souls who belong in the spiritual world. Somehow or other, we've come to the material world because we have free will. And so we're here. So we want to exercise the free will and see what it's like to run our own show, become center of the universe, apart from God. Because in the spiritual world, God is center of the universe. You say, well, I wonder what it might be like not to live like this. Oh, well, that's okay. You can check that out. Go down to the material world and knock yourself out. See how it goes. So that's what we're doing here.
We're being rehabbed. So we can get back into the spiritual world.
So we...
Kind of say
that's what I'm saying. Hmm. I thought I did say that.
Sometimes we've got institutional life.
You don't want to leave
the prison then.
You don't want to leave? No, you're used to the prison. It's, I mean, three hots and a cot. Three hot meals and a bed. And
you're very good.
Yeah, it's American. Three hots and a cot.
Not more than some people have.
And then you've been in there for so long, and then finally they let you go. These old guys leave. I don't go. What do you mean I don't want to go? All my friends are here. Got my routine. The best thing about prison, they got routine. Mm. Those guys need routine more than anybody. They don't know routine. Now they got routine.
You know. Some clinic, they always relapse just when they're about to come off it. Always. Pretty much like 100%. And they'll be dead the last 2 weeks. They'll be on it for years and years. And they'll always relapse.
Last 2 weeks of their program?
Usually, yeah.
And then they'll go take heroin?
Yeah, and back on it. They're on the beam. They come in every day.
And they want some methadone, no?
That's more the buddies, and every day they're coming in and the routine.
The free tent. It's familiar.
Yeah.
Mm. Familiar means, what's the root word of familiar?
Family.
Yeah. It's like family. Mm-hmm. You don't. Family, one can create family anywhere. Any kind of kinship. What was that movie, Tom Hanks and the soccer ball?
Oh, Wilson.
Wilson.
I've never cried over a football.
Wilson, she was a football. Soccer ball. Him and Wilson.
Companion for a week.
That's his family. That's familiar. Didn't he put a face on him and...
Yeah, Lars and the Real Girl had a plastic doll. Upgraded from a football.
What?
In Lars and the Real Girl, he had a plastic doll. He fell in love with a trash story.
And what story?
Another. It's called Lars. Lars and the Real Girl. It was Ryan Gosling. Did it where he fell.
Oh, I didn't see it.
He fell in love with a blow up doll. The same type of thing. The same type of thing as Wilson. He had a funeral and everything.
Oh, did she spring a leak?
She deflated. And they had a funeral.
Mm. Probably had gone down to the
But it was just, you know, the power of her, yeah.
Probably gone down to Erotica and got another doll.
One's a bit more robust.
David Norton.
Get himself a new wife.
You can talk back for now.
No, quite rather quiet. This is a problem. She never says anything. We just don't talk anymore. Do we have any good stories that happened to us in the last month? Can't think of any right now.
Power of reciprocation, I suppose, would be a big thing that I've learned. Every time I did something for someone that hadn't been expected, instantly something would be given to me. It happens over and over and over and over again. Even sometimes within minutes.
Yeah, we did something for, well, it was Clooney's idea, but we did it together. We got a gift for a juggernaut. And there's a DVD that I have here that I misplaced. And I'm talking about I misplaced it maybe 3 or 4 years ago. And every now and then it pops in my head, geez, I wish I could find that DVD. I put it someplace special, you know, so I could find it. So the day after we did this offering that we made to Juggernaut, to God, I picked up this package of DVDs on the shelf. I opened it up and there it was, right on top. The thing I'd been looking for years immediately appeared. So I thought, okay, what else can we do for him?
Yeah, I started planting like seeds for the garden. And I said to him, I said, now they're growing in the dining room at the moment. I said, what I ideally need is tomorrow to go and get a small water can, like a little one. Mm. I went up to the horse yard and the girl gifted me with a small metal watering can.
With flowers in it.
With the flowers.
You need
to
extra.
But within 12 hours, I had exactly what I wanted. Mm-hmm. Just little things like that keep happening over and over.
The more in tune you get with the powers that be, with the divine energy, the more you develop your relationship to God, the quicker your ability to manifest things happens. That's just a yogic principle. That's a yogic reality. So if you want to use Jesus as an example, you know, Jesus, we ran out of bread and fish here at the feast. What shall we do? Just keep serving. There'll be enough. So instantly he manifested loaves and fishes. They didn't call the baker. They didn't run down to the docks and find the fishermen. So when you can do that, how long does it take for you to have a desire and for that desire to manifest, for it to be realized? The shorter the time span, the better you are getting at it. The more you are on the wavelength.
Terrifying though, the more you stop desiring things, the more they tend to come your way.
Yes.
Like, if anybody wants anyone,
yeah.
It's just like...
Exactly.
It's always like...
on the one hand, the power of attraction is there, that you want something and you can draw it to yourself. That is a legitimate phenomenon. The problem is, with most people, is they are too attached to having it. And they want it like this. Now, they don't look like the face I just made, but that's what they feel like inside. Sometimes they look like that. And if they don't get it, the mode of passion or rajoguna is the mode of hankering and lamenting. Hankering meaning desiring what you want, desiring things, and when you don't get them, you bum out. You lament. Oh, but I really wanted that. That's attachment. When you want something, you have a desire, but you are not attached to the fruits of that desire, whether you get it or not, now you're operating more in a spiritual realm, or at least in sattva, mode of goodness. If you get it, great. If you don't get it, doesn't matter. And the more detached you become, the easier it is
for them to give it to you.
And then you take it to the next stage. The next stage is where everything you do it for God. You do it for God's pleasure.
Yeah, I think maybe the whole reciprocation thing would be a great way of presenting it to people, because doing stuff for God and actually feeling it is very difficult, and to focus on it, to truly mean it, it is a hard thing to do, especially when there's so many. But if I go and...
So many what? Desires.
Yeah. And then the brain went off anyway. So say, for instance, if I was to help someone do something, and then instantly something good happens to me.
Yeah.
Now, in your head, you go, oh, I've been rewarded for doing my thing. Now you do something for someone else and keep it going that way. And if you've done that long enough, it makes it, then you realize that God's actually rewarding you. And then you're happier to do those things for Him.
So, well, God is rewarding. Yeah.
I know, but it's hard for people that aren't, their brain isn't programmed to do it for God, that if they do it as a form of reciprocation. You get what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of tricking them into doing it in a selfish way, which eventually brings you to a... Unselfish.
It's a good way of doing it, because we're serving others, we're serving yourself, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But people understand that.
Journey,
but there's the higher level is serving God.
But it's very, what I'm trying to say is, it's real difficult for people to automatically just start doing it all for God.
No. You do it for others to start with.
Yeah.
Because that's tangible.
Yeah.
And then someone will do something for you somehow or other.
Yeah.
That will happen.
Yeah.
We know that.
Yeah.
But when you get up to the point where you're actually doing it for God consciously, that's a whole other level of experience. And that's far more potent and far more transcendental. Mm. And that'll completely blow your mind when that starts happening. Test it out. Kalindi was sitting there in Mayapur, where we were in India in January, and she was talking to the deity on the altar, to Radha and Krishna on the altar. And they were talking to her. And then they said, Krishna said, well, anyway, in about 5 minutes you're going to have to do this offering. You're going to have to do an offering. Oh, what's that about? And then within 5 minutes some guy came in, one of the priests, one of the devotees, and he says, no, one of the devotees came and said to her, come here, quick, Prabhu wants you.
Priest wants
you. It was a priest that wanted her. So she goes outside, right outside the temple, and this priest, she doesn't know him, who serves on the altar itself, said, can you do the offering? She said, what? She thought Prabhu was me, that I was out there calling her. I wasn't. The priest said, will you do this offering? And gave her a plate with flame, you know, a ghee candle, ghee wick, and incense, and a flower, and a bell, and all the paraphernalia was on this tray. Would you go in there and make this offering for Nrsingadev, which is one of the deities in the one of the statues? She was dumbfounded, because that's what she was just told 5 minutes earlier. So she was so gobsmacked when she was doing it that the priest at the altar says, are you okay? Have you done this before? Yeah, I've done it. Many are called. Okay. Anything else? Now you know how creation takes place. Chant your mantras, cleanse the mind, wipe the mirror of the mind, focus on the eternal, stop focusing on the temporal, don't let the temporal upset you too much.
I think Jay Shai's makeup was still in it. He's driving home. No, he screams out, watch it! Stop! And I'm like, what? I hit the brakes. And at that moment, the double decker in front of me jammed on its brakes, and I missed it by about that much.
Oh.
If he hadn't screamed at me, I would have been in the bus.
In the back of the bus?
Yeah.
There you go. Okay, we are going to be here next month. And that will be Tuesday the 7th of May.
Is it the double grey then on the 7th, or is that not till the 8th? The double grey day. Is that the 8th?
Let's see. Oh, I was going to say, if you're interested in... I now have 3 books on ebooks. Amazon, Barnes and Noble, iTunes. What's the other one? Smashwords. If you're interested, they're available.
The books you've written, Jim?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Okay, you're asking me about May. Double gray. Oh, you memorized that one, did you?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I remember Catherine was getting married on the 8th.
Oh, okay, I forgot. I forgot that entirely. Bronze to double gray on the Tuesday at 23:38.
It'll be not Columbia.
quick, I gotta go. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.